Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, February 19th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Brad, before we dive into the water cooler, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Sue from Colorado, who wrote us an email at bpearson@slashfilm.com. She just said, great water cooler episode with Chris. When you discussed Koyaanisqatsi and Samsara, it reminded me of a similar 43-minute 1985 film I enjoy called Kronos by director Ron Frick. The soundtrack by Michael Stearns is especially interesting and the visuals are stunning. And she put a link to the Wikipedia page for Kronos, which I'd never heard of. And yeah, Ron Frick was the cinematographer for Koyaanisqatsi, the non-verbal movie that Chris described watching last week and having a great experience checking that out. I mentioned that I had seen another Ron Frick movie called Samsara that came out in 2011. So this is definitely, from what I can tell, Kronos, this one that Sue was talking about, is very much like in that same family, that same style of movie making. So if you connected with either of those two films, maybe add Kronos to your list. I'm definitely adding it to mine, especially because it's only 40 something minutes long. So I think it originally debuted in like IMAX theaters back before that was like a normal thing that films did back in the sort of science museum era of IMAX. But I'm definitely curious to see if this is like easily accessible elsewhere. It's called Kronos. Okay, so let's dive right into what we've been watching, Brad. We haven't really been doing or reading much of anything, but there's been so much Saturday Night Live coverage because this past Sunday, I guess, was the... Actually, do you know the actual date? Like, when was the true 50th anniversary, or has that even happened yet?
The true 50th anniversary hasn't actually happened yet because the show... debuted on October 11th, 1975. So the actual 50th anniversary won't be until later this year.
Okay, so there's tons of SNL 50, as they're calling it, content. You and I did a big episode about I think it was a 4-episode documentary series that we both really enjoyed, but there's just been a ton of stuff. So let's, I guess, talk about the big one first, which was the actual, 50th anniversary celebration broadcast, a live show that brought together a ton of veteran guests and music performers and stuff like that. And it wasn't just a look back at things that SNL had done before. It was effectively a super long episode of the show featuring sort of the greatest hits of several of its players over the years. And this aired on Sunday night, so just a couple of nights ago. What did you think about this, Brad? I assume, you're the biggest SNL fan I know. So this must be like, you are eating, as the kids say, when it comes to SNL content these days.
Yes, absolutely. I was incredibly excited for this. I couldn't wait for this to come together. I knew it was just going to be a big star-studded event full of previous cast members and the big guest hosts and doing lots of fun sketches and montages of stuff from the past, and I was so excited. I've been waiting ever since they announced the 50th anniversary special, and yeah, I absolutely loved it. I really did. And it's interesting comparing this to SNL 40 because SNL 40 kind of felt like it was a little bit more celebratory and self-congratulatory, like the kind of thing you would expect from an anniversary special like this. A lot more kind of like nostalgic and kind of digging back into the past and whatnot. And while there was some of that here, I think for the 50th, what they did was they kind of approached it with more of an attitude of doing just basically like a blockbuster episode of Saturday Night Live, because while they still did sketches and stuff when they did the 40th, there was something about it that just felt a little more retrospective. And there, I think that there was less of that here, even though they did have a few bits here and there that were retrospective, like montages of physical comedy and a throwback to an old pre-recorded sketch that John Belushi started and whatnot. But this was just a lot of fun because it allowed to have so many big guest stars in sketches when you typically only have the one main host, on top of bringing together different eras of Saturday Night Live. Like the fact that we got to see a sketch of Eddie Murphy and Will Ferrell together, bringing back one of my favorite Kenan Thompson characters in the Scared Straight sketch, was just a real treat. Having the ladies from Bronx Beat meet Linda Richman with Mike Myers coming back was fantastic. Getting a new SNL digital short that really dipped into like something honest about SNL and how much anxiety everyone feels when the show's happening and when you're part of the cast, or even when you're working in any department of the show. And of course, Adam Sandler's really touching, lovely song about 50 years of SNL, which was packed with like little tiny like nuances and like references that only like the most diehard SNL fans would really appreciate, and that everyone who has worked on SNL loves even more. It was everything that I wanted it to be. I was so happy with it, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. It brought warm feelings to my heart. It made me laugh a lot, and I was very pleased with it. What did you think?
Well, I was worried that it was going to be that sort of self-congratulatory tone that you mentioned, and I was so happy when it really wasn't. It just really, like you said, felt like a top shelf episode of the show. And I thought it was pretty much straight bangers all the way through. I mean, there were like a couple little dips in quality. I thought like the part where Tom Hanks showed up reprising his role as Doug on Black Jeopardy, like didn't quite work for me as much this time as it did the first time around. The Domingo sketch, like, you know, maybe not firing quite on all cylinders there, but for them, and like, God, I pointed this out in our Slack, but the digital short that you mentioned, I love the concept of that, but I'm pretty sure they used AI to enhance a few moments in that, and it just really rubbed me the wrong way.
I'm not sure about that because like what I'm hoping is that I think that they wanted it to look like AI and hopefully didn't actually use AI to do those images. Because it's not the kind of AI where they're like stealing art or anything like that. And I'm hoping that they just wanted it to have that creepy AI look. And I'm hoping that they also talk about that when they do presumably an episode of the Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast talking about SNL 50, because they've in addition to covering all the old SNL digital shorts from their time on SNL, they have had episodes dedicated to when they've done the new digital shorts that happened when they brought Andy Samberg back and he was playing Doug Emhoff during this current season of SNL for election sketches and stuff. So I'm thinking they'll probably do a big SNL 50 episode, and hopefully they'll talk about that.
Yeah, I hope so too. But yeah, I thought like there were just really, really excellent stuff all the way through. I mean, the Debbie Downer sketch I really enjoyed late in the show, that Scared Straight one. I mean, just like the history of Eddie Murphy and Will Ferrell being on screen together on that stage at the same time just felt like a sort of totemic moment in the history of the show. Yeah. And then I even enjoyed like the little Q&A segment, which was like they kind of poked fun at the idea of like, aren't we just doing this to show off all the famous people in the audience? And the answer was yes, but I still had fun with that because Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were so good at it. And people, you know, got people like Ryan Reynolds and Quinta Brunson, like throwing little jokes in there, John Hamm, Zach Galifianakis, like all these people, Adam Driver and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, like that little moment was really funny too. So,
And the one thing I love about SNL too, is it gives it because how the show is produced, it gives them the opportunity to like comment like on the immediate cultural times and like things that are happening. And so the fact that they have Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively there, and Amy Poehler is able to say, how are you guys doing? He's like, why, what have you heard? You know, it's great to be able to do that.
Yeah. And then shout out to Meryl Streep playing Kate McKinnon's mom in the Close Encounters sketch too, which is just so fun. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed this on the whole.
I wanted to talk about the Domingo sketch because I mentioned this on, I do my own SNL podcast with a couple of friends of mine called the 10 to 1 podcast. And we talked about this, and the Domingo sketch is really interesting because It's become this big pop culture sensation right now. Marcelo Hernandez has appeared at one of Sabrina Carpenter's concerts as Domingo in reference to it. And like all of her fans are obsessed with it because it started with her Espresso song the first time they ever did it. They like fast tracked a Funko Pop of Marcelo Hernandez as Domingo that's like available to buy now. And I looked back at the previous anniversary episodes. This is the first time that there's ever been such a current sketch that was part of an anniversary celebration. The closest one for the 40th was doing like the Californians. And even then it was a few years after the Californians was like current and popular. This is like within a few months of it happening. And so it just goes to show you like how big and how viral that sketch has been. Cause if you look on YouTube, it has like millions of views and it's a big deal. And I just was, I wasn't upset that they did it because you have Sabrina Carpenter there. You might as well do something like that. I like the expansion of bringing in the groomsmen to do it. And then having Domingo have brothers played by Pedro Pascal and Bad Bunny. It was a fun, like much bigger execution of the concept. And I think one of the things that people maybe don't fully appreciate about the sketches, the musical bits are not intentionally professional because they want them to sound like amateur, like bridesmaids and groomsmen performing as if they were just normal people at a wedding. So Sabrina Carpenter is not giving her A game as like a singer because like that's the joke.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was not really familiar with the Sabrina Carpenter relationship to that sketch, and so I didn't. Really, I think that's why maybe that one stuck out to me, was because I remember watching SNL when, let's see, what's an example? Like Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy, you know, was on or something. Yeah. But I kind of...
Which they brought back a deep thought for this episode, which I fucking loved.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I understood that reference, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And, like, the Domingo thing was, like, in the era of the show, the current era of the show, where I'm much more checked out on it and just kind of pop in every once in a while. So for a 50th, I was just kind of surprised that they did something like that. Like the, I'm looking at a rundown of the episode right now, and I just, the Will Ferrell as Robert Goulet just caught my eye, and I was remembering that. I love it anytime he's able to kind of go off in that mode. And so, yeah, it just kind of felt like for the most part, they picked things that really, really connected with my time watching the show and my appreciation level. So I think they did a great job for somebody like me, who's only like a middling fan of the show. If I enjoyed it almost as much as you did, and you're like a huge fan, then they probably couldn't ask for much better than that. So excellent stuff there.
And you can still watch it. It's on Peacock now streaming. So yeah, you can watch it right now.
Yeah. Do you happen to know why people like Bill Hader or Dan Aykroyd were not there? Like, I know that I think I saw some rumors flying around.
Yeah. So there were three big people who weren't there. Bill Hader wasn't there. Initially, people were thinking that it was because he's been very open about how stressed he was during his time on SNL. That like it really took him a few years to like not have panic attacks every time they were doing an episode and stuff like that. But apparently he had some kind of long-standing schedule conflict. And so I'm wondering if maybe he's shooting a movie. He has another project he's doing that like no one's talking about or anything like that. So he wasn't able to be there. Dan Aykroyd apparently also had some kind of commitment that didn't allow him to be there. And then Dana Carvey actually got the flu that week, and he wasn't feeling well enough to be there. And he's been all over SNL this season anyway, because he's been playing Joe Biden. So it's not like he hasn't been a big part of the show or anything like that, but I'm sure he was missed. But yeah, those were the big three that who weren't there at the show that people were like, where are they at?
Yeah. Okay. The last thing that I wanted to say real quick, and this is maybe the lowest form of podcasting, is just pointing out moments and being like, hey, remember that? That was really funny. But I have to point out the moment where David Spade just disappeared from the Mulaney musical thing and just sat down. He was like, yeah, I got the feel of it. I'm good.
Yeah. that was so funny. It's just perfect Spade too. And man, we didn't even talk about that sketch. That's obviously now the best John Mulaney New York City musical sketch. And the people they got for that were incredible. I mean, having Nathan Lane do cocaine and some vodka to Hakuna Matata, having Adam Driver be a hot dog. I mean, the Taxi Driver deep cut too, of having Jason Sudeikis play Harvey Keitel's pimp character next to Will Forte and Kristen Wiig as Elmo and a green M&M. There were just so many great things in that musical sketch. I just, oh man, part of me hopes that like that was like the finale for it, and maybe they just shouldn't do one again, because I just don't know what you do after that.
Yeah, it seems very, very difficult to top that. All right, so you and I actually, we both watched Ladies and Gentlemen, 50 Years of SNL Music as well. What do you think about this? This was a documentary that came out, I guess, a couple nights before the 50th celebration.
Oh, no, so this is something different. Let's see if we're talking about the same thing. There was a documentary that Questlove directed that is just looking back at all the different musical guests and tells behind the scenes stories and stuff. And then there's SNL 50, the homecoming concert that was a couple days before SNL 50. That was just a big concert that had some bits in it.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah. So I did not watch the concert. Okay. I watched the Questlove thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. That came out like, I don't know, like a week and a half ago or something like that.
Okay. So yeah. What'd you think about that?
This was awesome. First of all, I wasn't expecting it to be like a feature length doc. I was expecting it to be something more along the lines of like the hour long episodes they did for the Beyond Saturday Night docuseries. So the fact that this was like a feature length documentary was a nice surprise in itself. But this was so cool because there were so many stories from behind the scenes from different musicians, stuff like that, that I wasn't aware of, because even though music has always been a big part of SNL, those stories don't always come to the forefront. It's the stuff about the cast and the sketches and everything. So hearing all of those stories, especially from like Rage Against the Machine and stuff like that, was really fascinating, on top of just getting talking heads in perspective about the music and how influential it was from people like Jack White and whatnot. But one of the coolest parts is like the first 5 minutes of this documentary, because what Questlove does is he takes clips from the musical performances from SNL and uses the music to make this like big mega mashup of all the songs, mixing them into each other. Like he's basically like DJing music clips from SNL. And it was so cool. It was such an awesome, like energetic way to like introduce the documentary and then dig into all these different big musical stars who have been on the show over the years.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I talked about this a little bit on an episode of The Water Cooler with Jeremy Mathai a little while back. So people can go back and listen to that if you want to. But yeah, were there any other highlights or moments from that you wanted to call out, Brad, before we move on?
No, I like that it gave them an opportunity to kind of like dig back into just especially some of the more famous instances of when things happen. Like you got a little more context about like the famous Ashley Simpson lip syncing incident and the, you know, Sinead O'Connor ripping the Pope's photo, incident. And then, you know, like just lots of other cool stories. It's just if you like music, if you like SNL, it's definitely worth watching. It's on, and that's streaming on Peacock right now.
Yeah. The thing that I didn't know was that the first rap performance on national TV was on SNL, which was just like really cool. The way that they brought some of those people and interviewed them in modern day and stuff, and like got their perspective all these years later. It's just like, man, this show really is kind of an amazing thing. So, So speaking of music, SNL 50, the homecoming concert, I think this was the one that debuted just a couple nights before.
Yes.
The big 50th anniversary celebration. Weirdly, Brad, given all of the SNL stuff that I've been consuming recently, I didn't know that this was happening. And I think that I feel like that's a failure of marketing to some degree, because if I'm tapped in enough to care about this other stuff, then like, why wasn't I aware of this thing? Like I think my wife and I like went to go see a movie, or we were watching something at home, and then I checked social media or something right before I went to bed and saw all these posts about like people raving about this SNL 50 homecoming concert. And I was like, this is the first I'm hearing of this. I had no idea. And then we don't subscribe to Peacock, so I just missed it and can't watch it now. So you watched it. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I did. It's this was really cool. And I do think that there probably was a failure in marketing, because I didn't see them even promoting it, I think, until like 2 weeks out. And I think it's largely because it was being live streamed on Peacock. Like it wasn't also on NBC or anything like that. But the benefit of that was that it was, because it was live streamed on Peacock, it was totally uncensored. So that made for a lot of fun, because it was, especially when they got to be able to do bits and stuff, you were basically watching an uncensored sketch from SNL, which was fantastic. And this was really cool, because I was anticipating that it was going to be mostly just some of the big names from SNL's musical performances doing a concert, and that largely is what it is. But because it is SNL, they did smatter like full on SNL bits throughout with musical ties. So the Lonely Island got to do this huge medley on stage featuring a bunch of the songs from their SNL digital shorts on stage that starts with Andy Samberg singing a really poor rendition of Shallow with Lady Gaga before she stops him and she's like, no, it's bad. And then they start doing Dick in a Box and then move into Mother Lover, and then Chris Parnell comes out for Lady Sunday, and it's this whole big stage show. And they have some of the other musical guests who are there, like Eddie Vedder and Bad Bunny, come out for to like sing some of the other songs with them for little bits, and that was fantastic. And then Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer got to do a bit as the Culps, which are the music teacher couple that they played on SNL, where they would sing modern songs in like a very kind of like old school way. And so they got to do a whole medley of rap songs that was hilarious and phenomenal. Like, people gave them a standing ovation. And Bill Murray came back as Nick the Lounge Singer and was accompanied by Anna Gasteyer and Cecily Strong and Maya Rudolph, who have an incredible set of pipes. They did some harmonizing for this Marvin Gaye song, and they sounded beautiful, like professional singers. So yeah, if you have a way of getting like a Peacock subscription or something to watch it, because on top of that, the concert itself, it has an amazing collection of people performing, along with, you know, appearances from Tracy Morgan shows up and he yells at Lorne Michaels, telling him he was disrespected because they didn't ask him to sing for the concert. And then he performs the theme song from Astronaut Jones, which I would never have expected. And it was so funny. But yeah, if you can watch the SNL 50 homecoming concert, it's absolutely worth it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing. I did
see it was kind of like a pregame to SNL 50 because like it allowed them to do stuff that wasn't going to fit into the actual show.
Yeah. Yeah. I did see the Lonely Island medley because that was up on YouTube.
Yeah.
But I haven't checked YouTube to see if any of the other things that you mentioned have been uploaded by the official Saturday Night Live YouTube channel. But I definitely will now, because it sounds like there's several things in there that I would love to check out. So yeah, people can watch that. I'll try to put a link to some of our coverage if we've covered any of that stuff directly on the site. I'll try to drop that into the show notes here.
Yeah, I did a countdown of the best moments from the SNL 50 concert. That's definitely on the site.
Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. All right. So what else have you been watching?
I also watched Kinda Pregnant, which is Amy Schumer's new comedy that's available on Netflix. It's produced by Adam Sandler's Happy Madison Productions, and it is a pregnancy comedy that follows Amy Schumer as a woman who kind of feels out of place when her best friend gets pregnant, and then she starts like getting closer with another friend who works at the school that they both work at because she's also pregnant, and she feels kind of left out. And in this like moment of panic when she's helping in a maternity store, she's mistaken for being pregnant, and then she starts pretending that she is when she meets someone who like she has a connection with. And like,
oh, that old story.
Yeah, feels like a new friend, you know, to her. And so it's occasionally a little too silly for its own good, but it also is charming and funny for the most part. You get to see Will Ferrell in just a kind of a normal love interest capacity for Amy Schumer, which is something you don't normally see from Will Forte. But it is very funny. There's a couple moments that were just like too over the top, and I'm like, why are we doing this here? Like, it felt like the silliest stuff that you see in some of Adam Sandler's worst comedies. But there is a good heart to it. It's charming. It's funny. It's a solid romantic comedy. And yeah, it's worth watching, and it's on Netflix.
Okay. So that's Kinda Pregnant. What else have you been checking out?
I also watched You're Cordially Invited, which is a new movie available on Prime Video that is directed by Nicholas Stoller of Forgetting Sarah Marshall and The Muppets fame. It stars Will Ferrell and Reese Witherspoon as two parents of two different brides who have booked the same picturesque wedding venue that only has enough room on this like little kind of like rustic island setting to have one like wedding party there. And a mistake in communication means that Reese Witherspoon and Will Ferrell's groups get there at the same time, and they try and share the space, and there's conflict and whatnot. Geraldine Viswanathan is in it from Blockers, and has a fun ensemble cast of people like Rory Scovel and stuff like that. The only problem with this is it, while it has moments of feeling like Stoller's good comedies, is that it's about 2 hours long and you feel the runtime. Like it's tough for comedies to be 2 hours long and be worth it. You know, Judd Apatow sometimes hits the mark with that, but even then his can feel overlong. And this one could have used some cuts here and there. But it's enjoyable for the most part. Seeing Will Ferrell and Reese Witherspoon in a movie like this is pretty enjoyable. They make for good adversaries. And there's enough to keep like you laughing and amused, but you start to feel it in the back half of the movie. You're like, okay, let's wrap this up.
Okay, so that's called You're Cordially Invited on Prime Video. And then what else have you been watching?
I've been getting into British panel quiz shows. Are you aware of these?
Do you mean like what's the guy's name that like does the interview? Graham Norton? Is there like a
no? So those are just regular talk shows. These are specifically panel shows that feature primarily British comedians, and there's also like a quiz show aspect to it where they're like answering trivia questions and stuff like that.
Okay, no, I've never heard of any of these.
Yeah, so the big one that I've been watching some episodes of it, and it's a yearly tradition, is they do a thing called the Big Fat Quiz of the Year, and so Jimmy Carr is the one who typically hosts this. You've probably seen him pop up on roasts and stuff like that. He's a famous British comedian, and they have three pairs of British comedians, and they are all answering trivia questions about stuff that happened throughout the years. And so they'll basically do it as like a New Year's tradition, essentially, of looking back at things that have happened and seeing how much people know and remember about like news headlines, pop culture, music, all anything and everything that happened in a given year. And so like one of the regulars who pops up is Richard Ayoade. So that's hilarious because he's super funny. I just recently looked back at one where they did the Big Fat Quiz of Everything, where it was like meant to cover like all time and everything, where Chelsea Peretti was one of the guests. And Richard Ayoade was paired with Noel Fielding for that one, which was a great throwback to the IT crowd and a lot of fun. But they've done one every year. I actually just found out that in 2004, Simon Pegg was on the Big Fat Quiz they did that year. So I want to go and watch that one. But then there's another one that's similarly fun called 8 out of 10 cats, that's also hosted by Jimmy Carr, and they have questions that are like based on survey results and statistics, and they have a lot of the same comedians who appear on the Big Fat Quiz episode. So they just, it's a kind of show that we don't really do here in the United States. The closest thing that I would say that comes to this is Hollywood Squares, but that show is scripted. And this is very much not like they're clearly just like riffing and having fun and goofing around. It's very laid back and very, very silly. And it's just really fun. And there's a couple accounts on YouTube who have been uploading like the full episodes of the Big Fat Quizzes on there. So if you just go and look them up, you'll find a whole bunch of them out there. And that's where I've been watching them on YouTube. So if you like British comedy, if you like trivia, they're a lot of fun.
Excellent. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into what I've been watching and what you've been eating.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tap. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All right, Brad, have you caught up with The White Lotus? Is that a show that you're familiar with?
I am familiar with it, but I have not watched any of it.
Okay. So the season three premiere happened this most recent Sunday. I'm not going to spoil too much, but I'll say that season one opened with one dead body being loaded onto a plane in Hawaii. Season two opened with multiple dead bodies in the water off the coast of Italy. And without really giving much away for those who haven't seen it yet, season three starts with a scene that seems to raise the stakes beyond either of those situations in a pretty purposefully upsetting way. This season is takes place in Thailand, and it's very much, this first episode is very much a typical first episode of the show, which is all about like slowly introducing you to the cast of characters and establishing the dynamics between several small groups before those people eventually inevitably start to intermingle with each other, basically. And I'd forgotten how slow that process can feel because most of my memories of The White Lotus are of like the big jaw-dropping moments, but this type of procedural going through the motions intro is kind of a necessary part of the equation that Mike White, the creator of the show, has landed on here. So I'll try to either devote a whole episode to the season at some point on this podcast, or at least maybe pop back onto a water cooler after the finale to talk a little bit more about it. But White Lotus season three is airing right now. The first episode's up on Max. Sunday nights on HBO is where you can catch up with the new episodes there. And then I also watched two movies with sort of similar thematic through lines, The Seed of the Sacred Fig and I'm Still Here. Have you seen either of these, Brad?
Which I'm Still Here are we talking about?
It's the one that actually just got a nomination for Best Picture.
I have not seen that one. I was thinking of the Joaquin Phoenix documentary.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, so Seed of the Sacred Fig is Iranian. It came out last year. And I'm Still Here is Brazilian. And it was given a limited release at the end of last year. And it's still actually in theaters right now. So both of these are technically period pieces. Seed of the Sacred Fig is set just a couple of years ago, and I'm Still Here is largely set in the 1970s. And they're both about what it's like to live under authoritarian regimes. So Seed of the Sacred Fig is about a family of four. The father works for the oppressive government, and a schism forms between the parents and their young daughters when one of the girls' friends is attacked by the police during a protest. And the younger generation is really tapped into social media, and they see what's actually going on in their country. And the state media on TV and stuff like that is just blatantly lying and trying to pretend like everything's okay. And this is a really, really good movie. There are some very powerful images of the two sisters who are in their like late teens, early 20s, scrolling on their phones and watching actual videos from the real protests that happened in Iran in 2022 and 2023. It's just really sort of depressingly relatable stuff. And it's the kind of movie that just gives you a knot in your stomach while you're watching it. And I'm Still Here gave me that same feeling, even though I didn't realize at first that this was based on a true story. I had no idea about the military dictatorship that ruled Brazil from the 60s through the mid 80s. And that the regime there used to rip political dissidents away from their families and like throw them in prisons and torture and murder them all in secret, and leaving the surviving family members in this horrible state of limbo, not knowing the fates of their loved ones.
And when you say it like that, it sounds bad.
Yeah, it's real rough. But man, this movie is like very powerful, really, really good stuff too. It was nominated for Best International Feature at the Oscars. And then it also got a surprise to a lot of Oscar pundits and stuff. It got a surprise Best Picture nomination, and Fernanda Torres, who plays a mother whose husband is taken, got a Best Actress nomination too, which is all just like very deserving because this was really good stuff. It's not exactly the type of movie that I'm eager to watch again, but I'm very glad that I saw it. And the performances, especially from Torres, are very, they're just like outstanding. So yeah.
Did you rent these or?
So I, I'm Still Here, I got a screener of, and then Seed of the Sacred Fig was actually part of Neon. They send out like a screener, like a packet basically of a bunch of all the movies that Neon releases as a company at the end of the year. If you're part of like a critics group or something like that, they'll send out like DVDs of all of that, so you can watch all of Neon's stuff for awards consideration. And I just missed Seat of the Sacred Fig when I was doing my like end of the year cramming, and was like, I've heard enough good things about this that I should probably not just ignore it forever and catch up with it, even though I've already voted and all of our end of the year stuff is already over. I just wanted to check it out. So yeah, Seat of the Sacred Fig, I think, is available on VOD right now, I think. And then I'm Still Here is still in theaters. It just, I think, came out like Valentine's Day or something. So it should be maybe slowly still expanding across the country a little bit. All right. So that's what I've been watching. What have you been eating recently, Brad?
Well, let me tell you, lots of fun things. I have tried new ice cream bars that are based on candy bars, an adaptation, if you will, because this is a movie podcast, right? So there's a trio of new ice cream bars that are available in the freezer now that are basically turning regular candy bars into ice cream bars, similar to how like there's a Twix ice cream bar and a Snickers ice cream bar and all that. There's 100 Grand, Butterfinger, and Baby Ruth ice cream bars, and I tried the 100 Grand and Butterfinger ice cream bars, and they are so good. The 100 Grand one is the best one. I love a good 100 Grand candy bar, and so this was great. It has the crunch on the outside in the chocolate shell. It has just enough caramel on the inside that mixes with the ice cream in the middle, and it's great. And the Butterfinger has a great crunch inside of it too. The Butterfinger is a little smaller than your normal Butterfinger candy bar, so don't go into it expecting like you're going to get a big old Butterfinger ice cream bar, but they're still very good, very satisfying. And yeah, you can find them in the freezer at your local grocery store right now. I think Kroger is where they've been popping up pretty frequently, but they're hitting like Walmart and other big groceries as well. So just keep checking.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, I also tried Post Malone's new Oreos. Did you know Post Malone had his own Oreo?
No, of course I didn't.
Well, you need to start paying attention, Ben, because this is important. Post Malone has his own Oreo, and it is a swirled salted caramel and shortbread flavor cream. And the cookie has both it's a chocolate cookie and the golden cookie, and there's like different designs on them, like a vinyl record and stuff, you know, inspired by Post Malone's music career and stuff like that. And these are damn good. I'm not the biggest fan of salted caramel. I don't dislike it, but I just don't typically go out of my way to get it as a flavor. But mixed with the shortbread and with the two different Oreo cookies, it's just a really good Oreo flavor, and they're just delicious. So I hope Post Malone or other musicians make more Oreos, because I'll try them.
Man, I've said this before, but like double stuff or GTFO, people need to stop messing with perfection when it comes to Oreos. Well, throwing all this shortbread nonsense in here.
have you had the most stuff Oreos?
I think I did try those one time, or maybe it was like a triple stuff or something like that, and I just feel like the ratio is off. I think double stuff is just like the perfect ratio. It's kind of the same way I feel about Reese's peanut butter cups. Like,
okay,
I used to love the like Reese's Christmas trees and stuff like that would come out around the holidays, or like the eggs for Easter or whatever. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that like the actual Reese's cup is just the perfect ratio, and everything else, when they try to elongate them into these other shapes, it just like adds too much peanut butter to the mix. So I think they kind of like knocked it out of the park first time around. Actually, I think maybe the only one that can rival just a normal peanut butter cup for me is like the little minis that come out around Halloween. Like the ratio is pretty solid in those two. So anyway, that's where I stand on this on this nonsense.
All right, fair enough. I mean, you're missing out on some delicious Oreos, so it's your fault.
I'll leave more for you. Tell me what you've been drinking.
I also I tried a new Hawaiian Punch C4 energy drink flavor. C4 energy drink, they are very good at capturing exactly the flavor that they're trying to deliver. They have, I don't know if I talked about this last time I did food on a water cooler, but they also have a trio of Jolly Rancher flavors that tasted exactly like the Jolly Rancher candy, just in a carbonated energy drink form. And they did the exact same thing with this Hawaiian Punch C4. It tastes exactly like Hawaiian Punch, just carbonated, and it's loaded with caffeine because it's an energy drink. What's great about the C4 energy drinks too, unless, you know, you're one of those people who is like, you know, any kind of carbonated sugar-free drink is poison, which you're probably right, but I don't give a fuck. The C4 energy drinks are sugar-free, so you can drink them and not worry about loading up on sugar, as opposed to if you were drinking like a regular, you know, Monster juice energy drink or something like that. So yeah, if you like Hawaiian Punch and you are on the lookout for a good new energy drink, the Hawaiian Punch flavor is aces.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's also a new flavor of Dr. Pepper that is blackberry, and apparently it's a permanent flavor, so you should be able to find it pretty easily here as it's been rolling out to stores. It's available in both regular and zero sugar, and I tried both, and I think both are very good. Some people think that it tastes like cough syrup, so it might be just the kind of thing where if you don't like blackberry as a flavor or something like that, then maybe you won't enjoy it. I personally liked how the blackberry flavor mixed with the Dr. Pepper, and the zero sugar version, much like all of Dr. Pepper's other zero sugar flavors, tastes pretty much just as good as the regular version. So you can't really go wrong if you want to try either one. They're both very good.
Nice. I think cherry Dr. Pepper is my favorite soda, just like full stop. So
yeah, cherry Dr. Pepper is good. And they, all their other flavors have been really good too. And they've done zero sugar of both. They have the strawberries and cream and the cream soda one. So yeah, you can't go wrong with Dr. Pepper, whether it's regular or zero sugar, in my opinion.
Okay. So what else have you been checking out?
So it's Easter. And so there's some Easter, and by that, I mean, it's Easter because Valentine's Day is over. and so there's, some new jelly beans hitting shelves, and these are Dunkin' Refresher jelly beans, modeled after the line of Dunkin' Refresher drinks that you can get at their stores. The flavors include lemonade, peach passion fruit, strawberry dragon fruit, and raspberry watermelon. And these are really good. If you're a jelly beans fan, if you are a fruit flavor fan, you're going to love these. They're very good flavors, very tropical and delicious. And I like them a lot. And they've been popping up at CVS and Five Below, and they should be in a lot of the Easter candy seasonal sections at various stores if you go looking for them. So definitely worth trying.
I haven't been inside a Dunkin' Donuts in a long time. Did they drop the donuts? Is it just Dunkin' now?
Yeah, it's just Dunkin' now. Yeah, their official brand is just Dunkin'.
So I've not been inside an actual Dunkin' establishment in a long time. Would a place like that, a brick and mortar location, carry something like this that's themed or like that falls under their corporate umbrella? Do you know?
It's possible, because similar to Starbucks, if you go into a Dunkin', they have like little displays that where they have like their own mugs and like bags and
like a little merch section
or
something.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a chance that they could have them there, but I don't know how likely it is.
Okay, gotcha. All right, and then you got one more thing to talk about too, right?
Yeah, one more thing, and this one is tied to film, so buckle up. There is a new Harry Potter Butterbeer Hershey Kiss that is available now, inspired by the drink from both the books and the movies. It's flavored like Butterbeer, the drink that you can get at the Three Broomsticks, and that is also available at Universal Studios in both hot and cold forms. And it's basically just like a big butterscotch chip, but it's very creamy in the middle. If you like butterscotch, you'll probably enjoy this. If you don't, it's probably not for you. I was a little underwhelmed because I was hoping it had a little bit more of a flavor that had something that made it more distinct from butterscotch. And the creaminess kind of helps that, but it doesn't really change the flavor profile very much. But if you check Slash Film and you look for like Slash Film Harry Potter Butterbeer, you'll see that there's also a bunch of other Harry Potter Butterbeer inspired snacks that are coming out here soon. Like the Keebler is going to be doing a Butterbeer version of their fudge stripe cookies. There's going to be Butterbeer flavored grams from Goldfish. There's going to be a Butterbeer flavored version of Skinny Pop popcorn. So if you're a fan of Butterbeer, you're going to have plenty of snacks to try to see which one captures the flavor the best. So we'll see what happens.
I assume the creaminess is because it's meant to, I guess, evoke the foam from the top of the Butterbeer. Is that right, do you think?
Yeah, probably. And plus the drink itself is like kind of a creamy concoction as well. So yeah.
Okay. I was trying to track down the different components there and put that all together in my mind. So that makes sense. Okay. All right. Well, cool. Yeah, I think that'll do it for today's episode. We'll have a bunch of links in the show notes. I'll try to link to that article that Brad was just mentioning about the Butterbeer stuff. If you want to get more specifics on that, you can find more about a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV and occasional explorations of the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.